This is The Illusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, rip off language's rubber mask only to find an identical mask underneath. Today's episode is about puns, and if you listened to the first ever episode of this show, you will know that I am generally anti-pun. But the puns in this episode are puns I enjoy. Am I relenting as I advance in age? On with the show. Do you remember when you first sort of became aware of like why you ate certain things at New Year and like how you felt about it?
Well, I mean, I was probably like a teenager or early teenager. I think most 13-year-olds are absolute delights to be around, and I was no exception.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So my mom would actually generally, you know, very modern in her outlook. So, you know, feminism, Maoism, get rid of feudal society. But when it came to New Year's and certain superstitions is what I called them, she was absolutely adamant we had to follow the rules around New Year's. And so we had to eat our lucky foods, even if some of those foods she forbade us from eating during the rest of the year. And I would say, well, why do I have to eat spring rolls? You know, you say they're too greasy and I'm going to get pimples. And she'd say, just eat it. You know, just listen to me. It's good, you know, make us rich, you know. And I'm like, but I don't see the connection between stuffing my face with spring rolls and getting rich. And she says, because it sounds like, looks and sounds like, you know, gold, and you need to just pay attention and just do it. It can't hurt, you know. I mean, you think you know everything and how the world works, but there are many things that we don't understand.
And then if you haven't got rich by the next New Year, do you take it up with the director of spring rolls?
No, I mean, I think you just keep eating them.
That's all right.
I mean, this is not falsifiable. This is just one of those things you just do. I mean, the question is, how seriously do people take it? I mean, some people might take it seriously. Other people think it's for fun. Or it might be, I think, more of a psychological thing where you set your goals for the year. For her, it was always like, eat more of anything that rises so you'll be tall. Because I was a second shortest person in a class full of very short kids. And, you know, eventually I, you know, slid right into the bottom of the third percentile for height. So it clearly did its work.
There you go. It's proof.
Yeah. Yeah. So my name is Miranda Brown. I teach at the University of Michigan in the Department of Asian Languages and Cultures. And my teaching is, well, very focused around China. And I teach a big course on the food and drink of Asia, as well as a number of other courses on various food topics, including sort of modern Chinese foodways, dietary modernization. And I will be next year teaching a class about Taiwan and its foodways, and probably also a class about the history of milk.
Wow.
It's one of my research interests.
So I was thinking, these topics sound absolutely enormous, and then just in case you weren't busy enough, history of milk.
It's been a project. I've been working on the history of milk in China on and off for the last 5-6 years. So hoping eventually after this next book on the history of Chinese-American foodways is completed, I can turn my attention to the history of milk and the unexpectedly long history of milk in China.
Incredible. But right now, I wanted to hear from Miranda about the foods that in Chinese culture are eaten at Lunar New Year because their names are puns or homophones. What is this principle that is at play here, with foods being lucky because their names sound like other things?
The main principle is that there's this very ancient Chinese belief that dates, I think, to the 1st or 2nd century AD during the Han Dynasty, that things that share similar sort of qualities, it could be appearance, it could be sort of textures or, you know, names, share in common some sort of cosmic resonance. So the basic principle is that you can activate those resonances by, let's say you want a lot of money, then you might wear clothes that have gold, or you could eat foods that sound like a lot of money or get rich. And that would sort of in some ways attract that desired end into your life. And this is especially sort of important during liminal times of the year, when, you know, seasons are changing, or when you're celebrating a holiday, the future is being decided, or it's somewhat inchoate. So this is your way of making these sort of desired outcomes, make them realized.
Because I was wondering, if the foods are lucky, then why can't you eat them throughout the year? But is that just gaming the system in a way it should not be gamed?
I think there's something special about holidays, which, you know, are transitional periods that make that kind of eating especially effective. And, you know, I also have to remember that during Lunar New Year, it's the beginning of the year. And so, you know, if you're going to sort of set your goals for the year, this is a good time. The beginning is a good time to start.
Do you have any favorites that you're looking forward to this new year?
Yes. I like the Niangao, the sticky rice cakes. The idea is that they're sticky, so they attract or stick the good luck. But they're not eaten very often, actually, outside of the new year. It's made with glutinous flour, which is considered a little hard to digest by most Chinese moms. But you steam sticky rice flour with some dates, and then after it congeals, you let it sit for a while or put it in the fridge, and then you cut it up and pan fry it for just a little bit of extra fat. And that's actually kind of a nice food.
Mm, it sounds great. And the name also means, you know, it's a homonym for something else, isn't it?
Yeah, so Nian Gao is like, Nian is like year, and then Gao is like high or rising. So the idea is that, you know, this year your position in life or your physical stature will be higher. Height is very important to Chinese parents with respect to their children. You hope that they will grow tall.
What are some of the others? There's quite a big list of the lucky foods.
Enormous list. One of the most universal ones, of course, is fish. Steamed fish, usually steamed whole. I think this is a more or less universal food in the Chinese-speaking world. This one's important because the character for fish, yu, sounds like the word for abundance or surplus. So the idea is that if you eat fish at this time of year, then you will have surplus, either agricultural surplus, you know, until recently China was an agricultural society, or if you're a merchant or worker, you'll have abundance in terms of what you need, food mostly, but also in terms of money or other material concerns.
And there's oranges and tangerines and pomelos as well.
The citrus actually has changed a little bit over the years. Some of the citrus is actually newer than others. The chungs, which is like one of these citrus fruits, that sounds like the character for like chenggong, or becoming successful or achieving your ends. So this citrus is important because it signifies achievement and success.
Lettuce is also lucky. Hence, you might see Chinese businesses hanging it up, and people feed it to the dancing lions, who chew it up and spit it out to spread the luck.
Lettuce, yes. So a lot of the leafy greens are called bai cai, or cabbage, right? That's not a perfect sort of translation, because there are many kinds of leafy greens that, you know, are vaguely lettuce colored or cabbage colored. That sounds like the, you know, the words for many riches. So bai means 100, but actually more loosely or more generally, you know, many. And then cai, which means greens, is actually translated, it sounds like the character cai, which means riches. So it's an imperfect pun, but people will recognize that, you know, sort of connection. And actually, you know, the New Year's greeting in Cantonese actually explicitly mentions happiness and wealth, or like striking it rich. It's like gong hei fa choi. So the second, the fa choi, Cantonese is not very good, but it's fa cai, which is to get rich, strike it rich. And that is like, you know, in Taiwan they say xing nian kuai le, which is, you know, happy new year. May your new year be happy. But in Cantonese, it's a little bit more direct.
There's vast linguistic and food diversity within China, because it's such a massive country. And then you've also got all the other places where Chinese is spoken. And do you know about like any of the homophone foods that may be specific to regions, but not generally in the lexicon like fish is?
Well, I mean, there's two things. One is that certain foods are more popular in certain areas, like, you know, in the north and in Taiwan, people, for example, eat dumplings during New Year's, but their dumplings are sort of shaped like bars of gold. And so they refer to the dumplings eaten during New Year's as like yuanbao, which is the word for kind of money. In fact, I might actually have an example.
Hello.
Here it is.
Oh my God, it's so beautiful.
Miranda shows me one in bright gold. It's a sort of symmetrical boat shape about the size of her hand, maybe a bit smaller. Historically, this was one of the shapes that gold or silver ingots came in.
But Miranda's didn't look very heavy, so I assume it's a replica and not a solid chunk of gold.
Right. I mean, this is picked up at 7-Eleven in Taipei.
Wow.
If you shape your dumpling like this, it looks like money, you know, an ancient like silver or gold bar. Now, dumplings are not eaten for New Year's in the deep south of China. However, there they have oysters, dried oysters. And that's because a dried oyster sounds like the phrase, like a good thing in the local Cantonese dialect. So there are these regional variants. Some of them come down to names, some of them don't. But there is always, you know, variants for sure. There are some foods that are a little bit more sort of niche. There is a kind of like Chinese seaweed that the Cantonese eat. It looks like hair moss. And that has to do with the fact that in the Cantonese dialect, it sounds like some kind of lucky sort of occasion.
Numerology is also important in Chinese culture, and the number 8 is considered lucky because it sounds similar to the word for prosperity.
An 8 is a lucky number, 4 is not. 4 is bad because it sounds like the word, it's si, but it sounds like the word si to die. Mm. So you generally try to avoid, you know, things that sound like that.
So the number 8 is also incorporated into the lucky foods, like 8 treasures soup or congee.
Yeah. In fact, I yesterday picked up from a store an 8 treasures niangao or sticky rice cake.
Nice.
The name, there wasn't actually 8 things in it, but the name was, you know, auspicious, right?
Yeah, you can eat the rice cake and think about like 7 other things.
Yes.
Just going to take a quick ad break. Thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring The Allusionist. A lot of us podcasters could not do without Squarespace, for one, because they've been sponsoring our shows since very early on, and they are still helping the likes of this small independent podcast exist, even while they sponsor the Super Bowl. And for two, Squarespace makes it so easy for us to create and maintain our own websites. And if you have a podcast, which of course is mandatory these days, you need your own website so people can find your show, share your show, learn more information about you and the show, and even see visuals if you so wish to break the podcaster's code and have an appearance. And also you can make episode transcripts available, not so they're a click away in a PDF or a Word doc like you're embarrassed to have them. Put them on your website proper. Doesn't cost you extra. Squarespace has ample room for all your textual exploits, as well as your audio and visuals. Head to squarespace.com/allusionist for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code ALLUSIONIST to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Okay, it's time for this ad break to get meta, because I'm going to advertise the concept of this ad break to you. The majority of my income is from the ads on this show, and podcast advertising, the way I do it, is proven to be ruthlessly effective, I mean marvellously effective, because a lot of you don't skip. You stick around to hear if I'm going to start talking about quails, or the etymology of brogue, or the 4 ill-suited housemates who illegally sublet a basement in my brain. And it's very nice of you to stick around, because then companies are like, oh, if we advertise on The Allusionist, then people actually hear about our products rather than slamming that skip ahead button with more urgency than all the episodes of ER put together. And the quail stuff helps the products linger in your brains, even if the product isn't actually quails. So if you have a product or thing and you want it to reach a very delightful, discerning, considerate bunch of listeners via the medium of me telling them about it, and your marketing budget maybe won't stretch to billboards on every street corner in the world, but can run to more than toilet cubicle graffiti, then get in touch via theallusionist.org/contact, and we can work something out. Unless you're a supervillain. I try not to advertise the wares of supervillains. Though you do have some cool capes. Okay, I would do supervillain cape ads. And now, back to lucky Lunar New Year foods with Miranda Brown.
No.
It's cabbage and tofu.
Yes, yes. Cabbage and tofu. Tofu is, it's like tofu, like good fortune for all. So that sounds like tofu. So it's like, it's not a perfect pun, like the tones are a little different, or the intonation's a little different between being curd and good fortune for all.
How do imperfect puns wash in Chinese generally? Because I think in Britain, or like in British English anyway, people are quite tolerant to puns being a bit inexact.
Yes, they are definitely tolerant. of that, yes.
They're like, anything for a pun.
Anything for a pun. Yes, yes, absolutely. That's definitely the case, yes. In fact, it makes it maybe a little bit more fun, right, if it's not exactly right.
That's the thing that I really enjoy about this. It seems really fun.
Yes, it's definitely fun. It's fun. And also, it's not, you know, necessarily the whole word. Like, you know, sometimes you'll kind of focus on one of the characters. Like, there's this steamed wheat cake. We call it fa gaw, which means, you know, fa is like to come out and gaw is like, you know, technically some kind of cake-like thing. And, you know, people are very like it because the first character sounds like, you know, the first part of fa cai, which means to get rich. And then the gao part is like, sounds like the word to rise or high. So, you know, steam cakes that suggest, you know, remind people, you know, I think a little bit loosely of wealth and then coming up in the world. Along with all the New Year's candies that are supposed to be auspicious, like peanuts, peanut candies are supposed to be good because signifies, you know, fecundity and also, you know, being able to generate offspring. This is also very important.
Any particular quality of the peanut that brings fecundity?
The name.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the second character, Sheng, means like to give life or to regenerate. So, I mean, all of that. Life-giving things are generally good.
Are there homophones that are considered bad luck and therefore foods that should be avoided at this time of year?
I don't think of negative homophones, but I will give you an example that I think is very, very interesting. So in Vietnam, you know, there is a Lunar New Year called Tet. And what's very interesting is actually people sort of eat a bitter melon soup that and with the idea that if you consume your bitterness during the start of the year, you'll encounter less hardship in the following 12 months. So they, you know, the bitter melon sounds like the word bitter, trouble, hardship. And so it's a little bit like the opposite logic, which I think is very interesting.
Do you find that any foods taste better because the name feels promising?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, when you have like long stretchy noodles, they're called chang shou mian, which is long life noodles. That's, you know, I feel like I can do it over the holiday because I'm, you know, extending my life, even though I know there's probably nothing good about putting that many sort of refined starches into my pre-diabetic body. So
damn it.
It helps ease some of the, you know, the discomfort and keep my doctor's voice out of my ear for at least, you know, the 10, 15 minutes that it takes to eat them.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want the doctor like ruining your luck.
Yes, that's it, right. And I'm doing this, you know, for cultural tradition too, you know, for the sake of the next generation.
That's very thoughtful of you.
Yes. Also deep fried, you know, spring rolls, another very healthy treat, you know. Opportunity to teach my daughter about, you know, what it's like to be Cantonese or Chinese in the diaspora.
We've been talking about the ways puns and homophones can be fun and playful with regard to the Lucky New Year foods. But there is so much else going on with wordplay in Chinese culture. Harking back to when Jing Tzu came on the show, in the bonus 2022 episode, she talked about how people in China also use homophones to defy censorship. Grass mud horse was the example she gave. It's something rude. Another example is river crab. The Chinese government has stated that censorship is necessary to construct a harmonious society. So people started using the word harmonious as a euphemism for censorship, until harmonious started getting censored too. So what sounds enough like harmonious to stand in for it? The words for river crab. Thus, something that has been censored will be said to be harmonized or river crabbed.
Oh, so yes, when there's censorship, people generally use puns to get around sort of the words that are often sort of like, you know, there's certain words that will flag the attention of the authorities. And so, you know, people will use a different character that sounds like it. So, you know, for example, you know, this sort of term harmonized initially started off as like a positive word. You know, so one of the sort of Chinese leaders talked about, you know, harmony in Chinese society. And then later, you know, when people joke about being harmonized, they talk about being censored. So he has the word for being censored. It has the word harmony in it. And so in order to get around that word, which became something that the authorities looked into when people would use it in text messages or social media, they use the word for river crab, he xie. And that's one of the ways that people get around attention from the authorities is to use puns. So, you know, punning is a big thing, not just at New Year's, but in general. Puns are huge. I mean, puns are important because when you pick a kid's name, you think about all the ways in which the name could be used as a pun potentially, right? And you don't want a name that is too easily sort of rendered into a nasty nickname.
Yeah, unless you really hate your future child.
Yeah.
And you think they deserve to be punished.
Names are important in Chinese too. Obviously, names indicate your educational level. And also, you know, they can also sort of give people a sense of what the goals are or what you hope your kid will be like. So my mother gave me a boy's name, which I think suggests that she had hoped that I would be a boy. But also, it's, you know, it's named Mu Da, which means like the idea is that I get what I want or I achieve what I, you know, I look for or sort of aspire to.
How do you feel about that name? Do you feel like it did sort of spark anything in you as you went through life with it?
No, I don't think it did. It came from me. I don't think I paid much attention to what my Chinese name meant. I don't know if I really knew, but I know that it probably sort of gave you a sense of how I would be treated in the family, and the sort of level of parental investment and you know, the sort of expectations and also maybe what people's early sort of assessment of me was. And I think that played a role in probably how well I did in school. Yeah. If your parents tell you you're going to do well in school and you think that you're good at that kind of thing, it generally has a positive effect on your school performance.
Yeah, although there's pressure as well. Like, how am I supposed to live up to this?
Yeah, there's that too. But if, you know, I think parental sort of expectation, you know, also changes the way you feel about yourself, your self-esteem, for example. So one thing is interesting is, you know, the early Chinese believed that actually names in some ways were predestined. Their names are fate. That's actually how one philosopher put it. And the idea is that names are not conventional or arbitrary or just random. They actually exist in human language because they point to the sort of inner essence of a thing. So that's why you want to pick people's name with a lot of care, right? Because, you know, by picking the right name, you pick, in some ways, you help form or shape the sort of character and the sort of fortune or the subsequent sort of life of the person. And I think that's part of the sort of logic behind this random sounding logic behind sort of eating things that are auspicious sounding and picking auspicious names for children.
Miranda Brown is a professor at the University of Michigan, specializing in the cultural history of China, and particularly in food and drink, which she's written some excellent blog posts about. You can read them at ChineseFoodHistory.org. If you become a member of the Illusionverse at theillusionist.org/donate, scads of delights await you, such as fortnightly live streams with me reading to you from my collection of dictionaries. Oh, how relaxing. You get behind-the-scenes information about the making of every episode, and best of all, you get membership of the Illusionverse Discord, a bastion of pleasant internet, where we chat about all manner of stuff and we watch things together. Currently, we're on the latest series of Great Pottery Throwdown UK, shortly to be double-billed with the new Canadian version of the show. And on the weekend of the 17th of February, by popular demand, we will watch Arrival together, the 2016 Melancore science fiction film with some very impressive linguistics in it. Join us, theillusionist.org/donate, and you help keep this independent podcast going for more podcasting. It's important to note, so many thanks for that. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is whimwam. Noun, archaic. 1. A quaint and decorative object. A trinket. 2. A whim. Well, how do you tell the difference between a whim and a whimwam? Try using whimwam in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, on the unceded, ancestral and traditional territory of the Musqueam, Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. The music is by Martin Austwick. Get his songs at palebirdmusic.com and listen to his podcasts Song by Song and Neutrino Watch. Thanks also to Mimi A. Our ad partner is Multitude. Ad spots are now available for this year. If you would like me to talk winningly and affectionately about your product or thing, supervillain capes included, contact Multitude at multitude.productions/ads. If you're celebrating Lunar New Year, tell me about your favourite foods, better yet, send me pics. You can find me at Allusionist Show on the various social networks. And you can hear or read every episode, find links to more information about the topics and people they're in, and to other episodes that might be relevant to the one you're listening to. And you can see the full dictionary entries for the randomly selected words, all at the show's forever home, theallusionist.org.